the most interesting thing to talk about for me, because I'm building my agency right now. You built an agency, right? And you managed to operationalize it really well. I don't know how much time you actually still spent yourself on it, but it sounded very little, right? And I'm very curious, like, how this came to be and, yeah, how you got to this point.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's like a few hours a week at the moment when it comes to the core business. Yeah.
So, and how did you start the agency in the first place? Because it's a podcast agency, and I know you have a podcast, but it's not really the kind of podcast you are selling, right?
Yeah, well, I've got a few, well, over the years, I've had a few podcasts, and perhaps the one you're referencing is What the Denmark?
Yeah.
That's a passion project. It just happens to, yeah, sort of fit loosely with what I have with work. But its primary means is for me to try and make sense of Danish culture, and doing so in a podcast way, in quite a fun, high production value, it just feels like something that I'd like to do. But I think, you know, in answer to how to operationalize or sort of remove myself from the daily work of the business, I mean, it was quite intentional that I could get to this point. So I started the business 4 years ago, or we started thinking about it more properly 4 years ago. And I had like various criteria that I wanted for what a business should look like. And like at its core was a repeatable solution for a repeatable problem. So I'd done, you know, freelance work in the past where, you know, in my first job, I did a lot of data analytics. And this was maybe, you know, 6 or 7 years ago. And everyone was talking about data analytics and business intelligence and dashboards. And I was like, oh, great. I know how to do that. That's quite a high value skill. I'm going to go out and like sell my services doing it. And it was a nightmare because every client is different. You had to spend loads of time defining the problem. And then once you define the problem, then you had to define the solution. And it's really difficult to break it down into component parts and to hire others to do it. So I was like, oh God, okay, I need to get myself away from that. And so this idea of like replicability. So everything that you're doing, like everything, you know, the core aspects of the business, there can be a process or a procedure written for how to do it. And then over time you optimize it. Is really, I think, been the key for me to be able to remove myself from the business, because the main elements of it aren't changing every 3 months. It's not like I'm a startup and you're building a product and you have to be constantly doing discovery and changing, tweaking features, etc. Like the core components of the business stay the same. And as such, you can remove yourself and bring in others to do it better than you.
Interesting. So that, yeah. That is very smart on the one hand, but also, I guess, very hard to figure out, because that's kind of like the holy grail, right? And I think like there, it's not black and white, right? I mean, obviously you have some things where it's everything is completely custom, and you have stuff which you can almost completely productize. Like if you run Facebook ads for a specific type of local business, you have a specific playbook and you apply it over and over again, right? Mm-hmm. And most agencies are somewhere in the middle, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I mean, did you really make a spreadsheet like with the different ideas you had and then ranked it based on different criteria, or how did you decide?
If I'm honest, it came about organically. And I then realized that it fit the criteria that I had. So I don't think I actually took that much effort into coming up with other ideas. I was doing my own podcast when I lived in East Africa, and I was living in Kenya, and I had a podcast, and several people, yeah, maybe one or two people a month would come up to me and say, oh, Sam, you know a podcast. I'm interested in doing a podcast. How do I do it? And so I'd sort of gone through and I'd written my templates and things on how to do it, which I'd just share with people. And then I was sort of, you know, thinking about, is there a, you know, I sort of had these criteria, but they sort of evolved a bit over time. And then I just, when I moved to Denmark and I was like, okay, now it's time to sort of actually crack on with doing a business. Actually, I've got this one that I'm sitting on, which is everyone's talking about podcasts. Think with a bit of thought, it could be fashioned in a way to have this repeatable solution. And so let's give it a go. And so it sort of really came from there. So yeah, I don't have that sort of nicely organized spreadsheet. But I think, you know, when I think about it now, it's, yeah, I'm sort of testing ideas based on that criteria. Because there have been some things which are good and some things which are not good from it. But sort of on the whole, that repeatability is like a big thing for me.
Yeah, I mean, I've tried to do this in the past, and my take is it never actually works, right? You can spend as much time as you want in these spreadsheets and try to find like what is really the best, but ultimately it doesn't matter, right? Because the only thing that matters is actually what's working. And you can never find that out in a spreadsheet. You just have to try a bunch of stuff. And like, was this actually like your first attempt, your first agency, and it worked right away?
Yes, I think so. I mean, I've been some form of self-employed for 8 years. And so I've sort of gone through the various motions of doing business, you know, doing operations, doing sales, et cetera. But this is the first time it all sort of came together in one outfit.
Yeah, cool. I mean, I see a pattern there, because like this, the agency I'm running right now is also my first agency, and it's working on right away. Whereas this Ryan, my business partner, also like tried a bunch of stuff before, and like software projects, and I tried a lot of data projects, and these are so much harder, I think, to really pull off. Obviously, when you manage to pull it off, it's amazing, because yeah, if you can solve a problem with software, that is just beautiful, because you by definition, you have this repeatability, right? It's just, but yeah, I definitely think for me now, I would never go back. I'm very happy.
Yeah, well, I think you wrote something once, you know, about the tech-enabled agency, or so, you know, some phrase like that, where I think it gives that slightly nerdy aspect of being able to optimize things and to sort of streamline things and to optimize, but without the pressure of saying this needs to be a completely perfect jigsaw puzzle that we're going to put out into the world and find people to fit it. Because at the end of the day, you still have smart people who are talking to clients and who are like, you know, allowing for that wiggle room, that final 10% to customize things if need to be. But it also doesn't mean you have to throw it all out and be like, okay, every client is a unique snowflake and we're going to give them a completely unique experience. You can find that middle ground. And I think, you know, framing it in that way, sort of allowing permission to sort of say, okay, I am actually doing something which is built to scale, even in customizability with each new client.
Yeah, I mean, that's the approach we very naturally ended up with. And I think, yeah, it is amazing. I love it. And it is also where I really see the future of for a lot of agencies, right? And also like a lot of software tools will actually not do very well, because a lot of stuff can be done. People can do stuff with ChatGPT, whatever, themselves, right? I mean, Code Interpreter is so good. And obviously there are all these API wrappers, whatever. So this already covers the lower end of the market, in my opinion, and it will just grow and grow together with no code, whatever. People can actually build their own stuff very easily. But what definitely will survive is this very, yeah, it's the human touch, right? An agency like ours, where we use all the technology, we write a ton of custom code and a lot of software, but we are not giving it to customers. We are using it ourselves to get results for clients. And what I love about this model is it's a lot easier to iterate, because bugs don't matter, for example, right? Because the customers never see them. We are just dealing with them on the back end, and it's like the beautiful swan, right? Above the water it's beautiful, but under the water the legs are moving like crazy. And no, you get like a lot of leverage and a much better margins than with traditional agency models, because I mean, it's two parts, right? And one part is definitely something I also want to talk to you about. Like, one is just writing code to allow our people do more. But the second part is operations, digital operations, right? Which is such a huge topic. And I mean, it's very obvious then if you can build like systems and operationalize things so that you can do with three people what others can do with 30, you're in a very good spot, right?
Yeah.
So how did you go about operationalizing your podcast agency? Like, and I mean, maybe we can start with just what repeatable process really looks like when someone becomes a client of your agency.
Yeah, so it took a few iterations to figure out what is the repeatable solution. But the headline that I was always wanting to be able to sell is, you do the fun parts of hosting a podcast and we do the rest. And so for a lot of clients, the fun parts, the bits that they wanted to do were to host the show. So to have, mainly we were talking about interview-based podcasts. So the premise is one or two people interviewing a guest every fortnight, every month, etc. And so the repeatable things that we thought our clients would do is to want to host the show, and they would want the ability to post promotional materials about the show. So initially, there's some talk of we will with each podcast episode, we'll also take the video, we'll also create various short form videos to put on YouTube and LinkedIn, and we'll even post them on your LinkedIn, and we'll even schedule them on your social media channels. And after a while, it was like, no, that's like not what they need. They just want the assets delivered and then they'll deal with it from there. But we still provide the copy, et cetera, to go. So that, sort of North Star of you do what you want to do and we do the rest with regards to podcasting, is to sort of remain consistent. Now, what we do with clients, I mean, in answer to your question, I started off doing almost everything, and then I noticed what I was repeating, and then I wrote standard operating procedures for what I was doing, and then I hired other people to do it, and I, over the course of two or three iterations, handed it over to them and then left them to it. So I never touched audio editing because I'm really not good at that, and that's a skill which a lot of people I knew had. The next phase, the phase up from that is production, in my language, production. So that is more of the creative decisions that are being made with a podcast. So let's say it's a 60-minute interview. A producer in our world would listen to it and to critique it and to say, okay, we're going to take out this 5-minute segment here. We're going to, there's a repetition of this question here. We're going to do this, blah, blah, blah. And they'll kind of do that high level overview of it. And then an editor will actually do the audio engineering of matching the files and all that EQ, et cetera. So for a while, I was the producer and I handed over to an editor. And then after a while, I realized this is something where I could give guidelines to someone and they could do it, and they'd do a better job than I did. Similarly, with creation of the assets, I noticed, again, I'm looking for these good 30-second, 45-second clips. Again, after a while, it became quite clear I could write some guidelines and someone else could do it. The last thing to go on the client side of things was the account management. So speaking directly to the clients, and that was typically in two phases. First, there was the setup phase. So creating what it takes to go from an idea to a fully fledged podcast, which is sounding really great and has got a good concept, and also the sort of ongoing client management of making sure that episodes were being made and recordings were being done and that we were being keeping the show fresh, etc. And so for that was the one that I spent most time thinking about hiring. And but again, it was by that point you have quite a clear job description, quite clear idea of what you want, and that sends quite a strong signal to smart people when you can have a really well-defined job spec, because they can really sort of attract it, and it means that you're very clear on what it is that you want. So that was my sort of level of removing myself, was to go through that and then just be there for assistance.
Interesting. How long did this take you?
Well, we were doing podcast episodes for most weeks or most fortnights, so that sort of 2-3 iterations maybe took a month and a bit.
I mean, the process of removing yourself, like how long it did take you to like write the SOPs, find the right person, fire the first person, hire someone better, like these kind of iterations.
Yeah. So I think with the producers, so that was sort of the creative work, I think maybe a couple of months. The account managers, that was maybe 3 months from me writing the job spec to having given a few candidates a few tests. Maybe 4 or 5 months for them to at least be, for me to not need to be on calls. I'd still be chatting to them and teaching them about if they had questions. And yeah, those questions would normally, you know, roll back a bit. But yeah, maybe like 3 months, yeah, maybe like 5 months or so. But then I was still doing a lot of work sort of in the background of the business, you know, doing notice, you know, doing building some of the tech, doing some of the operations, etc. And then it all kind of came to a head a little bit when I knew that I was going to be going on paternity leave for 3 months. So I was going to be stepping away from the business for 3 months. And then I had a very sort of clear date, which is, you know, in 2 or 3 months, I'm going to be spending, you know, max 2 hours a week on the business. So it needs to be able to run without me. And that was a real sort of sprint, should we say, to get me out of the business.
That's a great forcing function. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and are these all full-time roles or how does it work for you?
So in this time with the business, it was the account managers were part-time as full-time employees, and the producers, editors, content producers were contractors. And so they were paid on deliverable, but the account managers were paid a wage.
Interesting. Yeah, I know this is kind of like the standard model. Also, I think the different roles you have, and the interesting thing is that we tried it because this is what everyone is doing. And I absolutely hated it. And what I hated about this model is that there is so much room for stuff to fall through the cracks, right? This person is responsible for this, this person is responsible for this, and the person talking to the client is actually not the person doing this work. And then you have, I always felt like so much time is wasted just in these communication lines. So the model we now ended up on is that we have persons responsible 100% for delivering the client results. They do everything. And yeah, we kind of stumbled into this model, and they are like Ryan and I also started doing all the work ourselves. And the model is more like they became versions of us, right? They do all the work we did in the beginning, which is everything. And they just do it now for a subset of our clients, 100%, obviously enabled by all our technology processes. And we have some things where obviously the team works together, right? They brainstorm weekly, every day, help each other get unplugged. We have some processes for quality control because it's hard to see your own blind spots. And Ryan and I are still doing some parts, obviously, to remove bottlenecks and stuff. But I'm just curious, like what your experience is like with these issues, with stuff getting lost in translation and all that.
Yeah. Well, I think one thing that helps with, at least in the podcast world, is that the concept of a freelance podcast producer and a freelance podcast editor is very well developed. And so it's very normal for a professional podcast producer to be working on multiple projects at multiple times. And so I think the one question I got, or the thing I'm curious at, is sort of how you hire for someone in your business that, from the sounds of it, requires such a flexible skill set. And has that been a challenge at all?
Yes. I mean, it was a huge challenge for us, but there is a pretty simple solution, which we then figured out through many iterations, which is just we need smart people, and we need like people we can, with the right vibe, right? We people we get along with. And yeah, anything else really doesn't matter, like the background and whatever, because we can teach all of that. And we're happy to teach, and we have like this mentoring system. When a new team member is onboarded, they get one other team member to take them under their wings, and they just shadow them and work together for the first few weeks. So learn everything by osmosis. And this, yeah, works great for us. I mean, we also, it's another one of these things that SOPs and stuff, we tried, but the problem we always had with that is that they become outdated very fast if things are changing fast, right? Mm. And we are in an industry where we constantly have to iterate and change things. So yeah, we have a lot of SOPs, but the reality is that people do not really read and use them a lot, because I think in most cases, people read them once, right? And then they know how to do it. And it's only in the beginning when we had like, and when we tried hiring people, like global talent, what it's called, where you don't pay that much and their SOPs were a lot more important. But now the approach is really just hire amazing people, smart, good character, and then let them learn by osmosis. And I think it's going really, really well right now. Like because we have like completely flat hierarchies, right? There is no blaming anyone for anything because you're 100% responsible. Like everyone is also doing the same work. So it's very easy to compare, like, what is this person doing compared to what is this team member? And otherwise, we also found, like, how do you do stuff like capacity planning? How do you actually know how much work this requires? Because the thing is, people can always tell you, yeah, this took me 5 hours, and you never know, right? Is that correct? And then, yeah, you can do like screen recording and really get on their back, and I never wanted to do like this. So, and now it's very simple because we know, like, this person is able to do this amount of work, you should be too, right? It's straightforward because everyone is doing the same thing. So yeah, kind of interesting learning curve we had there.
Yeah. I mean, how many clients can one person service?
This is something we are still figuring out. We still haven't hit the limit, to be honest, which is interesting. And it's also changing all the time because of the technology and everything, the processes we're building, right? I mean, in the beginning, when Ryan and I was doing it ourselves, I mean, I had problems serving 5 clients, to be honest. Mm-hmm. But now we have some amazing tools and processes, so it's at least double that. But yeah, we're still learning, and it's very interesting. But we definitely haven't hit like the limits, but we also, you don't want to push it too much because we never want quality to suffer by any means, right?
I was about to say, how do you keep an eye on, how do you have quality control?
There are two parts to it. One is our output, right? And one is results. And for output, we have different things. We have like whenever a new campaign gets set up, a different team member is actually checking the campaign, right? Actually checking if every setting, all the settings, all the copy, all the data looks good. And then we also have like the clients involved actually in the process, obviously. They also get full transparency and give us feedback. But then we have, yeah, we look at results, right? This is the main thing. We have a culture where people can really freely try things. And they really enjoy that because we don't have like cognitive machines and everyone is just going through the motions every day and having a to-do list, but it's really a very creative thing. And I love that our team members are trying new stuff every week. And as long as it works, it's good, right? I don't care. Like if it looks weird or seems dumb in the beginning, and we're figuring out a lot of great stuff. And the way it then works is once a week, we have a big, we call it a brainstorm session where the whole team gets together and we look at all clients' results for each team member. And then we go through the ones that are struggling where the results are not where we want them to be. And yeah, we just try to figure out together what is going on, what is not working. And then this is great because like different team members can chime in. I have a similar client. I see this is working really well. You should try this. And yeah, it's the, my most fun part of the week, actually, when we when we do the brainstorms.
Yeah. So what bits are you struggling with in terms of are you wanting to remove yourself from the day-to-day a bit, or like, yeah, what is it?
Well, I mean, there are several typical agency problems we have, right? Every agency would love to have more clients. And we are a sales agency, so this is a problem, obviously, we figure out. And we tripled the number of new clients compared to last month. So we are definitely on the right track, but it's still far from where we want to be at. But this is, I mean, an obvious one. More interesting is for us actually the quality of clients we bring on. And I mean, this is definitely an interesting topic to talk to for every agency owner, because you definitely do know that not all clients are made equal, right? You have some that are just amazing. They appreciate what you do. They give great feedback and stuff are just working really well. And then you have clients where, yeah, they scream very loud about minor things, and then they get a lot of attention, and it's in the end ultimately not very worth it. So I mean, I'm super curious how you figured this out, and we had some interesting learnings. I talked to other people about this, but I'm very curious. Like, did you find a sweet spot by looking for specific signals, or maybe you don't have this problem at all in the podcast world? I have no clue.
I mean, we've definitely had some clients where it's been a bit tricky. But I think most of it is, and it's sort of slightly taken back to sort of your quality control. It's like, if the client's happy, then that's great. And so, you know, in our world, you know, there's, you know, how many downloads you're getting, how many things you're getting. And, you know, ultimately, if the client is happy and they feel that they're getting some good benefits from it, then they'll continue wanting to be a customer. When it came to identifying potential clients, we came to realize that there are certain characteristics where it just works, where it just makes more sense. So if you are a B2B company where you only need a handful of new clients, it's much easier to demonstrate the return on investment versus a B2C client. And so anytime we've got a new B2C client inquiry, we just sort of really tried to talk them out of it. And if they insisted, then we'd, you know, give it a go. I think probably our best way of doing it was to, in the first call, explain our pricing model, which for us is, you know, normally you're paying a few thousand dollars a month to get the service. And so a lot of people are interested in sort of DIY podcasting. You know, if you're an individual and you want to, you know, just have your own podcast, and that just very quickly removes them from the equation, and we sort of don't even engage with it. So for us, we sort of were a bit picky. Yeah, we're quite choosy with the ones that we engage with in that way. But yeah, I mean, there's not a specific thing. I mean, we never got too formulaic, because, you know, there was one client which initially was like, oh, yeah, you're not doing it for marketing, you're just doing it because you want additional content. And they ended up being a really great user, so a really great customer, and then realized that actually someone who is a head of content is probably more interested in having a podcast than someone who's a head of marketing. Because if you're head of content, you're like, your metric is how much content am I producing, and podcasts are a great way to do that. So that what initially was like, oh, I thought we were going after marketing teams, focusing on content teams was actually better. So as long as it felt, you know, they're going to continue being happy, then that kind of works.
Interesting. Yeah, Justin Tan from Video Husky had this interesting post on this, where basically the thing he figured out is that the only really good clients are the ones that have hired like a video freelancer before. And for us, the sweet spot is definitely people who have tried cold email before, because we find like when people never tried it, they just don't understand it. Right. Yeah. And it's just so much work to understand like the general approach, how it works, and like what actually matters. And the second thing is actually how many deals clients already are closing, because we have like that's the biggest thing for us, is unrealistic expectations. And the worst clients are always the ones with unrealistic expectations that you have to get this out of the way in the beginning, right? Either they get on board with realistic expectations or we can't work with them. And the easiest way is just to ask them, how many deals are you closing right now? Because they are telling us, yeah, I'm expecting to close 20 deals from your work every month. Yeah. Okay, how much are you closing right now? Zero. You have bigger problems, right? And we are not the savior, because you first need a sellable product before we can help you sell. And if your product is not sellable, yeah. I mean, I think it's probably the same for you, but not to that extent, because I figure like any company reaching out to you has a pretty well established product, right? You're not really dealing with early stage.
There are some who would say, you know, that probably is another sort of, if not red flag, but orange flag, is, you know, if I think one thing I've, you know, learned to say is, it's much better to you, if you're, I imagine similar with you, it's like, if you're going to be giving them some energy, like, it's much better if they're already walking, if not running, than it is if they're stood still. And so like you can really sort of see many more results if you're backing the winners or helping the winners get better versus helping the starters get off the front line, get off the start line. And that just in terms of, you know, the amount of how seriously they take it, the amount of resources they want to put to it, et cetera. Obviously, it becomes a bit harder because it's a bit harder to chase the people who are already running, to really extend the metaphor. But that's it, once you get them, you know, it really is, your energy can go so much more with them.
Yeah, interesting. No, so that sounds like very similar to what we are experiencing. So I see we're running out of time. I mean, talking of forcing functions, I have this amazing forcing function called the Zoom free limit, which I sometimes hate, but I think it's a good thing to not go too much over time. But we didn't even get to talk about your new thing, and we didn't talk about Denmark. So we definitely gotta get on another call soon, okay?
Yeah, of course.
Thanks so much. Really enjoyed this.
Cheers, Jacob. You see.
Talk soon. Bye.
Bye.